The dock was situated at the exact center of the beach, an L-shaped jetty that thrust into the water a good 80 feet before the seafloor fell away, enough for the small freighters that had brought the equipment to build the facility. The causeway looked sturdy and was more than wide enough for the excavators and cement mixers that had once swarmed the island. A corrugated metal building sat where the jetty met the road. A parapet wrapped around the flat roof, giving a wide-open field of fire for anyone up there. They also had an unobstructed view of the sea approaches. A pickup truck was parked behind the guardhouse. They could see two guards with high-powered binoculars on the roof, automatic weapons at their sides. Another pair of guards was walking the jetty, while two more patrolled the beach. Any communication lines they had with the main facility were buried, so there was no way to knock them out in order to isolate the guardhouse. Juan imagined Zelimir Kovac had laid out the security, and he would have left standing orders that, at the first sign of anything suspicious, the bunker was to be notified so it could go on immediate lockdown.
"Switch to thermal imaging," he said.
The scene on the monitor changed so that nearly every detail dropped out except for the body heat given off by the guards. There were teams of two atop each cliff they hadn't noticed on the visual scan.
"What do you make of those trace signals next to the guys on the cliffs?" George asked.
"Small engines cooling down, most likely ATVs similar to the ones they had in Corinth. Heck of a lot of fun to ride, provided no one's shooting at you."
Cabrillo was more interested in the signal emanating from the road. It was waste heat from their power plant, just as Eric had said. They had done an excellent job of masking the heat signature. To even the most trained observer, it looked like the road was merely radiating heat built up during the day. The dull orange line on the thermal scan continued out along the jetty before spreading nearly the width of the dock. It had to be a diffuser, he thought, to further mask their heat signature. He saw no sign of the air intake manifolds. Cabrillo hit an intercom button so he could speak to Eddie and Link, who had been watching the aerial reconnaissance on a monitor in the boat garage.
"What do you think?"
He knew the answer before Eddie replied,
"We're going to pay a hell of a butcher bill, and there are no guarantees. Have you gotten any detailed shots of where the road ends?"
"Holly's working on it now."
"They're coming up on screen," Kasim said.
The enhanced stills flashed onto the monitor, and everyone eyed them carefully. The road simply stopped at the hill. They knew there had to be doors to allow entrance, but they were too well hidden.
"Depending how armored they are, we might be able to blast our way in," Eddie offered with little enthusiasm.
"We don't know if it'll take a couple of ounces of C4 or a cruise missile."
"Then we use the Nomad to get us in close to shore and try to find the air intakes. We'll need a torch to cut our way out of the pipe once we get inside," Eddie said. "I just wish we had more time to let the sun go down."
The orbital track of the Russian satellite had dictated the time of their assault, and there was nothing anyone could do about it. Juan looked at the clock again just as the hour display clicked to zero.
"What are those two guards on the dock doing?" George asked, after flipping the drone's cameras back to visual.
"Laying down on the job, it looks like," Juan remarked absently.
"I think there might be something in the water. I'm going to swing the UAV around for a better view."
For days, Max had racked his brain, thinking of a way out of the subterranean fortress, and he had only one solution. On a late-night foray, he'd come up with the idea of sneaking from the bunker by way of exhaust ducts from one of the subterranean generators. With nothing left to lose, he made his way through the pitch-dark passage. Without light, Max estimated he had been crawling for 20 minutes. The tunnel ahead was as inky as the length stretching out behind him. Doggedly, he plodded on, gaining a foot with each four-legged pace. "Kyle will be okay," he thought. He was certain that no matter what, Juan would rescue his son again. And because of the fiasco the first time, he would use a different shrink to help deprogram his mind. The chairman never made the same mistake twice, even if he didn't know what had caused it in the first place. Max even believed that he would figure out that it was Dr. Jenner who had betrayed them, though he knew Juan would never guess Jenner's true identity. He could hardly believe it himself.